You're listening to Irish Radio Canada's Home and Abroad, and it's time to catch up on more of the Irish-Canada connection, because in this Irish Heritage Month, we celebrate the Irish-Canada connection, not just on the 17th of March, we celebrate it for the whole month. And the Irish-Canada connection goes back. We have heard earlier in the month, or we heard last month, about the Waterford-Newfoundland connection, and we've also heard a lot last year about the Peter Robinson migration, which was in the 1823-1825. There were two migrations in that period, and one in the 1823, some came to the Ottawa Valley. 1825, it was more in and around the Peterborough area. But between 1847 and 1856, and we're all familiar also with Black 47, when there was huge migration from all over Ireland to Canada. But between 1847 and 1856, Earl Fitzwilliam removed 6,000 men, women and children from his 80,000 acre estate in Culloden. And while most were sent to Quebec and many travelled onward and settlements up in the Ottawa Valley and in other parts of Ontario and New Brunswick. And in the process, Fitzwilliam was reducing his tenants from about 20,000 down to about 4,000. So a major transportation of people. And we've chatted before with Lynn Rees-Loftus about this when the Ireland-Canada, there was the Canada Come Home, and there were a variety of other events back in 2013, I think it started. But Lynn has had written a poem, and it has been put to music, Irish Pioneers, and it's celebrating the migration and transportation. And Lynn has written the lyrics, and has also helped in the melody with Owen O'Sullivan and Larry Hogan, and Larry performs it. Lynn, welcome, and thanks a million for taking the time to come and talk to us again.
Thanks, Austin. Delighted to be here.
I know I covered an awful lot of ground there, but I was just giving the overview. You're going to get into the detail. The migration in 1847, 1856, Fitzwilliam saw the opportunity to clear the land of 6,000.
He did, and I suppose compared to some of the landlords around the country and in the West, Fitzwilliam, actually to this day, up in Culloden, is regarded, you know, slightly differently, in so much that in clearing the 6,000, he did provide passage. He paid for the passage. They built trunks for them, give them to put their belongings in. And he provided a certain welcome to a certain degree over there. So he's regarded slightly better than some of them. But that's not to say these people had to leave their homes, as in the poem, their homes and their hearts behind, and go to the other side of the world, more or less, that they had no experience with whatsoever. They did, in some cases, they were going to areas where there was already quite a sizable Irish community, and so that, you know, helped a lot.
So, Lynn, you were mentioning there that some of this was chain migration. So, in our of a sort, that the people that were coming from Ireland were going to places where the Irish had already established.
That's right, and the situation was very much different than the U.S. situation with the Irish immigrants, because they, more or less, they all went and into a rural environment, which they were more or less used to, but certainly not the weather and the landscape, you know, which was so very different from what they had to deal with up in Culloden and in Wicklow in general. And that would have been very hard to get used to, and took a while, I think. So, you know, the snow and the types of crops they could plant, etc. And they, but they were helped by the Irish that were there already, and the ordinary communities, Canadian communities. They were also helped by the indigenous population there as well. And people do know of the Choctaw donation, but they recently came across a letter that was sent by the indigenous peoples in Ontario, who also provided for them, donated and provided help when they arrived. But it was still a shock.
And Lynn, Fitzwilliam had about 85,000 acres. As I understand it, he was probably the largest landowner in Ireland. And many of his, what were tenants, would have been trying to work bits of land and provide rent. And as this, I guess, after the famine and at this period of time, there was a real struggle with the tenants being able to come up with the rent and with the landlords to make their estates viable. So this, what Fitzwilliam was doing, was happening right across the country. The landlords were effectively trying to reduce the population on their land.
Absolutely, yes. They were getting rid of the people on their land in a lot of cases. Not in the case of Fitzwilliam or here in Wicklow, but many certainly around the country were literally putting the people, sending people, taking them out of their cottages and destroying the cottages so they couldn't get back in and leaving them on the side of the road. It wasn't, you know, so, you know, I suppose you'd be happy with small mercies, but, you know, that's why it wasn't as bad. But it, you're still having to leave your homes and your families. Not everybody went. It was horrendous. Now, the Canada Come Home event in 2013 was amazing because, you know, I had contact with Irish Canadian associations over there, as you know, Ontario and Quebec, etc. And those, the descendants of the immigrants from Tulatin, were so passionate about wanting to come over and trace their roots here. And in fact, what was amazing was the stories linked, because the descendants in Canada had the story of what had happened to their ancestors when they arrived in Canada. Whereas here, we had the story of what had happened to them when they went to the boat. And what we found was they were able to link up, which was it was amazing that the story linked up. And we have people from, you know, the descendants in those areas in Canada came back. They couldn't attend the actual gathering event. They came before, they came after, and many of them have been coming back ever since.
And Lynn, one of the parts of the Irish story that is rarely kind of covered is that when the Irish arrived, they were particularly the Irish Catholics coming from estates like Fitzwilliam. They were outnumbered nearly 2-1 by what were already Irish Protestants, who were nearly the ruling class in Canada. And they were arriving in to still into what would be a class society.
Yes. The only thing was that the majority of them who did end up in the rural environment, where, you know, in most countries, but certainly in Canada, where your neighbours, and I've been there, done that myself, lived on a farm in Ontario, your neighbours, it really didn't matter, you know, what religion they were, but you had to help each other.
Right.
And so that, I think, was really important. And not only in the where they landed, whether it was in Quebec or Kingston or whatever, they would have had the local Catholic diocese and the people tried to help out. But when they got to there, it often was they were given some land, then everybody depended on their neighbors.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like going to a city where it can be very lonely and nobody knows each other. But the rural story for the Canadian, you know, the pioneers, the people that went from Carlaton or in Ireland in general, is that it got, I won't say it got put aside, but they literally got on together and helped each other, whether, you know, whatever religion they were, whatever, yeah.
The other thing was that Fitzwilliam had a vested interest in that he had shares in the expanding railway or the developing railway system. And I think my understanding is that he saw that it was a win-win, that he could reduce the tenants on the land, but he could provide workers to help develop the railroad in Canada.
That's right. And in particular, in St. Andrews in New Brunswick, where there was the railroad building was going on at that time, he had shares in that. So he identified some of the immigrants, and they were going to be sent to New Brunswick and particularly St. Andrews. However, with the, you know, sturdy young men who I'm sure he identified to go and work, do the manual labor, came were the families. And so what happened was when they arrived in St. Andrews, instead of a few dozen, you know, workers, able-bodied men, they ended up with a couple of hundred to 300 people that they weren't expecting. And they didn't allocate them anything. I mean, literally, those few hundred who weren't going to be working on the railroad were left stranded, and they had to rely on any charitable organization at the time who could help them. But the people, you know, in St. Andrews have a wonderful connection now, and they've traced, you know, the connection back and forth.
And of course, the story has, as you rightly mentioned, the First Nations, their contribution to the famine has been identified and is now being praised and catalogued and shared. And all a lot of the other help that was provided that oftentimes was glossed over, the Canadian story, because I think we've always found that the American story has tended to overshadow the Canadian story, and I think, fortunately, that's changing, and it's work like yours is helping that. Before we talk about the piece of music and or the song, the poem that's gone to song and sharing it, I just want to take the opportunity that to acknowledge the work that Kevin Lee put into helping elevate the awareness of the Culloden story. And sadly, Kevin passed away a month or so ago, but I think it would be appropriate just to acknowledge the work that he did.
Yes, Kevin Lee was, and his wife Eleanor. Kevin was a on our committee for the Canada Come Home event, and was instrumental in working with us to, when people came over, that he met them, and he then had been, I think there'd been a couple of families who had been in touch with Kevin, and he was researching their ancestors here. And so then he went on to write, it was one or two books, but he went over to particularly Smith's Falls, which was a huge, huge Irish connection. And because a lot of the emigrants went down and went in at Kingston and then traveled overland to land in Smith Falls. And so that connection has been kept up. Kevin and Eleanor, as they were instrumental in doing that. So, yes, and, you know, he's such a figure up. He was such a figure in the Culloden area, and, again, would continue to welcome people in, organize them to go round to their their cabins or their or the get a view of the house. The house is being refurbished and to its beautiful standard, I believe. But while that's been happening, Kevin was able to organize people to go in and have a tour, etc. So yeah, himself, he was instrumental in that, and I'm sure you have links to his books.
Indeed, indeed. Indeed, and the most recent project, well, the one that was done recently, Shoeboxes, gave an opportunity of the very families you're talking about and their descendants of those families to find links back to the connection, back to Culloden. And that is a beautiful piece of work as well that is available. And Lynn, we're going to wrap up. We're going to share a piece that beautiful poem put to music, performed by Larry Hogan. And I want to thank you for taking the time. It's been great reconnecting and chatting with you. And the piece of music we're looking at, it's Irish Pioneers, and it is definitely telling the wonderful story of from Culloden to Canada. Lynn, thanks a million for taking the time.
Thanks, Austin.